This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Sandy Kearney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 95, Internet of Noobs.
Hello and good afternoon, good evening, good morning. This is Michael Martin. I'm coming to you again live for another exciting edition of GamesAtWork.biz. I'm coming to you from my laptop without the benefit of my wonderful Yeti microphone, so apologies for that. But I am joined by my ultra fabulous and wonderful co-host, Michael Rowe.
Hello. And I think I heard you clap on yours.
I did. I was so happy I had clapped.
What's that? What, there's like a little kids game about when you're happy and you know, clap your hands.
Something like that.
So we know it, man. We know it. Happy Friday in the world of the Internet of Noobs here on GamesAtWork.biz. Really excited. We took a little hiatus thanks to day jobs and travel and all the other stuff that just keeps getting in the way. And unfortunately, our other two wonderful co-hosts are, again, not available.
Suffering that same problem.
Yes. Yes. And all I can say is, what?
Well, we missed you guys. So I'm glad to be back, and I am happy because, you know, after 2 weeks away, has it been?
It has been 2 weeks.
I missed this.
And after an awesome show 2 weeks ago.
Yes, exactly.
Where we talked all about the IBM Design game, yep. And had a blast with that. So it's really exciting to be back. But speaking of games, I sent out a link to all our show hosts and co-hosts and the most hostess coasts for a game.
So you did.
That's right. Because we talk about games at work here, and this game.
Yes.
Brings me all the way back to the beginning seed gem of GamesAtWork.biz. Even before GamesAtWork.biz. And that was Project Wookiee. Dancing with Wookiees. Which was all about... Do you remember what our exact original example game was?
Apparently I don't.
If we could get somebody just as excited about learning programming as they are about dancing with Wookiees, wouldn't that be awesome?
Oh, I thought it was work, but I'll give you a programming.
Our example was JavaScript. It was okay. JavaScript programming. And so we found this site this week called checkio.org, which has built a game to teach people how to program in Python.
So why don't they call it checkpython.org?
Probably that URL was taken. That's a really good question, and all our listeners should send tweets and emails and Facebook likes and all those other great things with a copy of this episode, which is episode what? 95, 96, 93, 94? Somewhere. I think it's 95. I believe it's episode 95. You know, we should probably know those things.
We should know before we start recording.
We should
talk about them.
But it is episode 95.
Or we could insert it later.
No, yes. Pretend we just inserted that later. So episode 95.
It's great to be here on episode.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
It's wonderful on episode. Okay. So episode 95. And send it over to them and say, hey, why didn't you call your site Check Python? And I think it is, what is the thing that you use Python for?
Checking inputs and outputs, of course.
Actually, programming, but that's beside the point. it's actually interesting. So I've been working on a, and we'll get to the game in a second, but I have to fill in some background because that's what we do. I've been working on a demo for next Tuesday night. I'll be at the Internet of Things, the Raleigh Internet of Things meetup. I love their meetup name. It's called Riot.
That's so funny.
Raleigh, Internet of Things, right? And I'll be demonstrating. I have 7 minutes to teach a group of a sold out group, even though they don't charge for it, I think they said there's 120 seats and every one of them's taken, of engineers on how to do Internet of Things development. And so I'll be demonstrating an application that I've been working on, a very simple application, but it talks from a mobile device up to the cloud to a simulated car and allows you to send messages back and forth. So if you think about things like OnStar or other types of services that allow you to lock and unlock your car from your cell phone, I will basically be demonstrating how that all strings together. And the car is actually a simulated car running in Python. It's normally running on a Raspberry Pi, which I have with me. But because of the logistics of the location, and I can't show the Raspberry Pi and actually log in because I don't have a monitor to carry around with me for it. I'm going to show that code running in a terminal window on a Mac. So I'll have the car, the cloud, and my cell phone talking to each other and sending messages back and forth. So it's going to be kind of cool, and I'll demonstrate how it all strings together between messaging protocols, cloud-based services for a debugger that I've written, as well as the actual application running in real time. So anyway.
So we need to help our listening audience, especially those that are in North Carolina, find out how they could get more involved in Riot and maybe go to the next one where other interesting people are also.
Yeah, I've only got 7 minutes to do the demo, right? I mean, each person gets 7 minutes to talk.
It sounds very Ignite-ish.
Very Ignite-ish. And so I tried to make it as meaty as a demo in 7 minutes as possible without being so overwhelming that people just go, what? If you go to meetup.com, if you go to meetup.com and look up Riot, R, capital I, small O, capital T, that's the group. And I actually have written a little blog post on this on my blog over at triangleappshow.com too. Oh wow, I got a plug-in. Woo! That wasn't even planned. but so Python.
Yes.
And we're not talking about Monty. We're talking about Python, the programming language. So you had a chance to take a look at their little training game.
I did.
And your thoughts?
Well, I watched a video of it. I didn't actually do it. So my thoughts are, hey, interesting way to encourage people to gain some skills. So the video from Techzilla was helping folks to understand that, hey, if you are not a Python expert, this will allow you to take advantage of a series of lessons and to then actually achieve a task that will go through a compiler and which will validate whether you achieved the task and got the requisite output. So I guess that's the input output right there. And then once you've checked whether that input output was correct or not, you'll be assigned points and be able to unlock additional missions and be able to go forward with more learning along the way. So we've seen a few other examples of this sort of thing in the past. We know that it is very useful because these are ways that people can challenge themselves and challenge others to see how fast they can go through a process to learn something. And the graphics that I saw on the video and on the site themselves are extremely inviting and help you visualize, you know, how you're going to island hop your way from the beginner and library islands all the way to rock star status. So
yeah,
that's kind of my thoughts.
Yeah, I watched the video and actually set up an account and started trying to play with it. And what was interesting to me, if you remember a couple of years ago, the summer 2 years ago, I believe, we had an episode called Code School.
Yes.
Right? Which was another gaming platform that was teaching people how to program for iOS. And I had supported their Kickstarter and got access to it. And it was actually kind of interesting. It was more of a, I wouldn't call it a game. They called it a game, but it wasn't really a game. It was more of just a guided a learning system where they had a really good integration of video, audio, lessons, and then a iOS emulator running in the cloud in your browser that would allow you to write code. It would compile the code and then show you what the code actually did on the phone, right? So that was kind of cool at the time. And this is the same type of thing, except without the videos and with very, very little instructions. It's more like just a series of challenges.
Right. And ways to go get some help and go to forums and learn from some others. So, I mean, it's nice that it's looking to establish community that way. So I think
yeah,
good things.
Those are good things. The thing that I admit I only spent about a half hour playing with it. Okay. Actually getting in, setting up the account, going to the first island, going to the first thing. And it pretty much really wants you to immediately go into the forums and engage people. There is a library island that was there, right? Which I thought would be, oh, that'd be cool. That's where I can, you know, get all my data that I need from the library. Mm-hmm. But when I went to Library Island, it didn't seem to behave like I wanted it to, in the sense that here's the description on the library. All around you are piles of old books and ancient computing machines, each with their own mystery. Can you figure out how to find the sum in a triangle? Can you help Sophia by writing the rhythm of her song? Keep on reading because the place is a real page turner. So I'm like, okay, so that sounds like it's setting up a little thing. And the first one is called Fizz Buzz. So Fizz Buzz is a word game. We used to teach robots about division. Let's learn computers. Input a number as an integer, output the answer as a string. Example, it's how you learn simplest functions work with if-else. That's pretty much it, right? That's the instructions. And you have an option to discuss it with others or immediately go in and try to solve it.
Right.
So where does it tell me the function for input is?
Well, that's a good thing. I don't know. I mean, look, when you're starting languages...
When you start a language, there should be some kind of basic structure that gets you started to understand the syntax, right?
You would think so. Some basic basics.
Yeah. And I'm not knocking it yet because I haven't played enough with it, but it seems like it assumes a level of understanding of the syntax that may not be accurate for someone who literally has come for the very first time looking into programming and decides that Python is the way to go.
Well, and Python, from what I understand, is one of the base languages that people are encouraging noobs to programming to start with.
It's interesting. If you take a look at Swift, which is Apple's new programming language that they announced this summer, to me, it looks like kind of a hybrid between Python and Objective-C.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I can assume a lot of things and just code the answer based off of other programming languages and knowledges. But if I come to it and really try to come in as a clean slate, I don't see that it gets me past the first hurdle.
Well, I wonder if the parser syntax checker provides enough help to say, hey, you positioned your variables in the wrong spot, or you've got a punctuation error and it looks like you're missing a comma, period, semicolon, whatever, and you've got to go fix that. I haven't played with the actual game itself yet, but from what I saw in the video, it's intriguing.
Yeah,
I think it draws people in the right direction.
I agree. I think I think the idea is the right thing. I'm not sure about the implementation yet. And as I said, in all fairness, I only spent about half an hour poking around on the site. But I couldn't find where's that first step that gets the person their very first thing, so they can feel comfortable starting to write the program.
So while you're just talking about that, I was looking at one of the things that I've played with before a little more extensively and that I've liked quite a bit, which is Duolingo. And apparently I haven't opened this app up in some time because it's asking me for a username and password, and I have to go through the reset process because I'm not sure what password it is. And I hadn't stored that password in 1Password like I should have.
And now with the new iOS 8 update that you have on your phone, you can actually have 1Password fill it in for you.
Well, exactly. But I've not yet seen that work properly as yet.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I've got it working. It's awesome.
Have you?
Yeah.
I've not managed to do that with the internal Safari, because that would be cool. Because if I could also have 1Password now create a new password for me at the same time, which it should do. That would be great. So yeah, so I'm excited about Duolingo, and I've been having some good fun with that. I just haven't obviously logged in a while, so I need to go through the process to get 1Password set up properly with iOS 8 Safari on my device, and then have it pop in the passwords as I go. So I will take that as an action.
Well, I'll make sure that we enter that into the minutes of this meeting, and ensure that next meeting we go through the action items at the beginning to ensure that you actually did install the password correctly.
Yes, exactly. But Duolingo has been kind of fun, and what I liked about Duolingo too was that it was doing the language training not only via, you know, here's a phrase or a sentence or a word or an object, give me the translation for it, but it would kind of do a variety of different things, including the spoken word, to check for understanding, check where you need to go.
Very cool.
And I could imagine, this could be a neat thing too. Wouldn't it be cool if, let's say, I was trying to learn Japanese and a Duolingo could use an API to Siri and say, hey, use what the person is saying in Japanese and actually have it write out the kanji on the screen and then validate whether that's the right one or not.
Oh man, yeah. If by the way, did you see earlier this week ePred posted a kind of a historical look back at the early virtual internet activity days?
I saw that he posted it. I didn't follow through the link, but I did see that he posted it, yeah.
Anyway, the reason I bring that up, if you remember one of the very first things that we did in that environment, well, I think Andy actually did it. Andy Piper, our friend who's over at Twitter now as one of their developer evangelists, was taking voice-to-text, text-to-text translation, text-to-voice. So it's kind of exactly what you're describing, but now imagine just doing that on your cell phone.
Well, and it would be a way to validate that what you're saying is interpreted properly as to what you think you're saying.
Exactly, exactly.
Right, right. So, you know, because if you were, you know, using, you know, you're saying each or knee or whatever, and your pronunciation could be evaluated to say, okay, what did the interpreter, what did Siri think it was? And that actually could be an interesting way of making Siri and others better and or more, failure tolerant, you know, that people who are kind of close to trying to say what it is that they're trying to say actually get through.
Yep, yep. Makes sense.
Interesting.
So, I like that. Well, you and I were chatting earlier today about another game idea.
Yeah, well, we were, weren't we? You know, the thing that I was kind of noodling about a little bit, and your talk actually is kind of a neat segue into this as well, that you're going to be doing at the R-I-O-T.
Riot.
Riot event, which
sold out.
I could not find on Meetup. I will have to look again.
I will put a link in the show notes. Show notes. It's kind of like donuts, but for show.
For show. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Throw me off my complete mental track, William.
So Riot is a great transition into the other game that we came up with, or I should say you came up with and we discussed earlier.
Yeah, so here's the thing. You know, my kids in the morning, as we're trying to get out of the house and get people to school and where they need to be and what they need to do, inevitably. There's something.
Indubitably.
Judicial system. There's judicial something system. That they cannot find.
Something.
You know? It's like, where's my raincoat? Where are my shoes?
Where's Waldo?
Waldo can stay wherever Waldo needs to stay. Where's my lunch? and you know what? You don't want your kids losing their lunch on their way to school.
No, you want them to be in class before they lose their lunch.
So the game idea was there have been so many different ways of tracking things.
Yes.
And then finding those things again. You could actually make a game out of it to say, okay, you know, you win when you are passing through the door, which maybe is a reader portal a la, you know, warehouse management system, when you have all the things on and around you.
You just turned your kids into a supply chain. And the car is the loading dock.
This is what it is. I mean, look, seriously, you have to be in a certain place at a certain time. And you need to make sure you've got all the elements of the bill of materials there together at the same time.
Just in time delivery, baby.
And you cannot do an in-flight merge of your bill of material unless that turns into, you know, a secondary delivery a fulfillment system or with complete with logistics and in transit merge.
Yes.
That's not gonna work.
Yes.
So yeah, you could set up a game that says, okay, you need to be in the staging area and you need to have all the things with you. And what are all the things that you need with you? And if you don't have them, guess what? The portal now beeps red and says, hey, kid number two,
you cannot leave.
You cannot leave.
And they go, oh darn.
Oh darn.
Shucks, I can't go to school today because I forgot my fill in the blank here.
Yeah, well, you know, and you might have like a little monitor up above that says, okay, well, shoot, what am I missing? Oh, I'm missing my lunch. Oh,
I'm missing kid number two.
I'm missing kid number two. I'm missing kid number 27. Depends on how many kids you have. You might need a tracker like this.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So this is a practical use of a game kind of technology. And Michael, you were quick to point out that Kickstarter has had a variety of things to allow for easy tracking.
Oh, yeah. There's been a ton with the whole kind of the maker community over the last few years, really jumping on connected devices and the Internet of Things and all the cool things that you can do with. So about a year ago, I tried to define the essence of the Internet of Things at its simplest. The essence.
The purity of essence?
The essence. And I said, the architecture essence of the Internet of Things is a thing that can identify itself and send a piece of data to a place, right? And then that place can look at that data and trigger an event. That's it. And what's interesting about the Internet of Things, it's millions of things sending billions of messages, building out this larger complex system that provides interesting data to drive interesting outcomes and events. Right.
Right. Right.
And so if you look at, and we'll have a bunch of links in the show notes of various different Kickstarters around sensor tags and other things. Right. But if you look at that list of various different Kickstarters, all of them really are about a thing that can identify itself and broadcast some piece of data that they then put into an application of some sort, right? And that's what's really interesting about the Internet of Things. It's not. I mean, it's cool to build a thing that talks and says, "Hey, I'm me," but that's not interesting really until you bring it together with other things or with a place that collects that data and provides some type of analytic on it, analytical
something.
Service. And that's cool. I like it. I like it.
Well, I do too. Absolutely, because this is where the power really comes together when you're putting whether it might be toys or building blocks that amount to something bigger, component modules that on their own do something, but together they do something more.
Yeah, well, if you think about any developer of a product in this space, in the past, even if I had very complex software in my product, I thought about the product as a complete entity, right?
Right.
Even a car, right? A car has, you know, upwards of, you know, 8 to 30 computers on it, and they talk to each other. But that car was the thing when you were done, right? But now, that car by itself is only one piece of a larger system that includes, you know, data coming to it about maps and GPS information coming from satellites tied to analytics on board that's tied to other sensor data from the road system for traffic signs, etc. And you get these really bizarre is the wrong word, but these very complex system of systems that have to be understood to say that's how we get to self-driving cars. And 2 weeks ago at the ITS is the name of the conference, and I can't remember what it stands for, but the head of GM, I think it was the GM CEO, said that in the 2016 top-of-the-line Cadillac, they will have hands-free cruise control. Think about that. You know, each step along the path to self-driving cars in a consumer model, not one-off Google cars, right, or the self-parking car that Mercedes, I think it's Mercedes or Audi shows in Germany, right?
And Ford. But, Ford's had that too for a long time.
No, I mean, you literally use your cell phone and say, go park in the garage and come out of the garage and pick me up at the front door. Ford has parallel parking.
Right.
There's a difference. But each of those are all steps along the idea of, you know, one day when you and I are in our 105-year-old age, right, we can still get in our cars and go enjoy a drive without having to worry about the fact that we may have lower reflexes or not actually be able to drive, because the self-driving car is coming, and we're seeing it go faster and faster. Beginning of last year at CES, I saw a video with the CEO of one of the major car suppliers, part suppliers to the auto industry, and he goes, "We believe that by 2025, we'll have self-driving cars."
And you know, we'll be noobs at many other things at that point in time.
Yeah, and I'm sitting 2025. I've got, you know, hands-free cruise control, completely hands-free cruise control in 2016. That's a huge jump from just lane assist that cars have now that say, oh, you're about to go out of your lane.
Well, and active cruise control, which right now maintains a certain distance between you and the car in front of you, but you still have to steer.
Exactly. I mean, each one of these is one more step down that path, which is pretty amazing.
Well, yes, and I think part of the story here, too, is that you can't unleash all of these innovations on the world all at once, because then people will flip out.
No, but you can put them on your kids and make sure they have their lunchbox when they go to school.
Hey, you know, if you're the one who has to go and get their lunch to follow up with them and say, you forgot your lunch and here it is.
Yep.
You know, is that better or worse than making sure that they had it in the first place? go find the blah blah blah, right? I mean, you know,
what's the incentive to actually be ready at the front door with all your stuff correctly found in time to go to school?
Well, that you are relaxed and happy and you're able to get to school on time. There's
yeah, but what if I don't really want to go to school? So it's got to be a carrot and a stick, right? You know, just making the little red light come off when I go out the door might be fun.
It could be. It could be. And there are probably a few parents whose red lights go off
every morning. Why don't you have your lunch? It's sitting on the counter. I spent all night working on it.
Well, it's fun to think of these things.
No, I think it's great. I'm just playing with you, man.
I know.
Because it's a game. It's the game called gamesatwork.biz. Wind up your co-host.
I'm not wound up one least bit. I personally think that these are things that technology is now starting to give us an opportunity to do something a little different. Like, I mean, right now, the you would have to have batteries. You would have to have some sort of method of knowing which thing is doing what thing and where it is and how it's working.
But
my sense is that battery is not going to be the defining moment of this. And as smart clothes, as smart, you know, objects, and you just use smart as your quasi definition for discoverable, trackable, traceable.
A thing that can identify itself, send data to another place, and have that place send some reaction or response back through analytics.
Exactly. There's where you have now the confluence of new capabilities that people hadn't even dreamed of before. And
Absolutely.
once it's set up, it will be so much of the, oh, well, of course we do this. We've always done this, and I can't imagine how we did it before.
Yep. Well, cool. I know we're out of time.
I know. Ugh. Just we're getting started too.
Yeah. So, everybody, we value your feedback. We thank everybody who's provided feedback over the last couple of weeks. We're still looking at, how can we make this even more valuable to you? So, post on our Facebook page, on our Google Plus page, to our Twitter accounts, or come over to gamesatwork.biz and
Is
comment on episode 97, Internet of Noobs.
I thought it was 95.
Did I say 97? Oh, darn. See, only a noob would get the number wrong.
See, comment on it anyway. What,
I think you should comment on our inability to know what show we're in.
What time is it? Who am I?
What?
Do I have my lunch? Okay.
I don't know.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.